Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Mark Walta, Registration Number 30990, appearing on behalf of Darno Pepper, the appellant in this matter. I don't think that there's any great dispute that the sole issue, the primary issue below in this case, was the identity of the shooters.
Speak up a little louder.
Sure, Your Honor. Therefore, it's my intent to focus on two issues, Issue 1 and Issue 2, that bear most directly on Mr. Pepper's theory that someone other than himself, more specifically Tanias Pike and Donnell Wilson, committed these shootings. Before I proceed with the heart of my arguments, I'd just like to point out to the Court that there's a relationship between these two issues. As regards Issue 1, we have a situation in which Mr. Pepper was effectively prevented from putting on the testimony of an eyewitness named victim, in this case, BG, as a result of the trial court's failure to grant a continuance in the first instance, and then its latter failure to grant a motion for mistrial on the basis of its failure to grant a continuance. Had VG testified, and she would have been prepared to testify, I think the prosecution ultimately conceded this post-trial. What she would have testified to is that an individual generally matching Donnell Wilson's description was at the commencement of the shooting wielding the silver 9mm handgun. A reasonable inference from that, based on her description of the scene, is that he took down SR, what I refer to as SR in the briefs. She then sees an individual matching Hiram Sampson's description, wielding the black 45 caliber handgun, pointing it down at the floor of the kitchen. Based on the scene, it's reasonable to conclude that he was pointing it at the young men who were
wounded. Isn't it fairly clear, sort of by a process of elimination, that handgun was not the murder weapon?
That the black 45 was?
Well, you're saying it's a black 45. As I recall in the record, it says a black weapon.
Mm-hmm.
The murder weapon was a black 45.
Right, and the only two weapons ultimately recovered in this case were the silver 9mm and the black 45.
And there was no evidence of Sampson's DNA on the black gun, is that right?
That's true. His DNA was not tested, or his DNA was not compared to the silver 9. You know, there are a number of logical explanations for why his DNA might not be on the black 45, despite VG's testimony that he was seen in possession of it, much in the same way that Donald...
Well, you keep saying in possession of it, but I think there's a strong inference that gun that he was holding was not the same gun.
Well, in actuality, I don't think there was any testimony at trial that Sampson was in possession of any gun. At any point, the individuals that were specifically identified in possession of guns were Donnell Wilson, who came to the scene with both the silver 9 and the black 45. He allegedly gave the black 45 to Tanias Pike, who then comes inside, and then, according to Hiram Sampson, he witnesses Pike give the weapon to Mr. Pepper. That was the transaction, according to Sampson, at least, to the extent that his testimony is to be believed. Donnell Wilson apparently remained in possession of the silver 9, and in fact, one of the eyewitnesses described an individual matching Wilson's description with the 9 tucked into his waistband.
There were two silver weapons, were there not?
Well,
observed by the witness.
And this is, I think this is the great difficulty of this case, is that you've got competing and conflicting eyewitness testimony as to precisely what the guns look like. Some of them describe it as a silver gun, a chromed out gun, there's a gray gun, others testify to a black gun. So there's very little coherence in that respect, even among the eyewitnesses. Some eyewitnesses give internally inconsistent accounts in terms of their description of the suspected shooter and then their ultimate identification of Mr. Pepper as the shooter, who doesn't even match in any respect their descriptions of the shooter.
He is arguably the one who stuck his arm in the door and began firing. There's the only description of that person is a black arm. Mm-hmm. I mean, a jacket, or as I recall, there's no one describes that person as by description.
And the other descriptor that is used by some is the presence of a black glove, which is significant in this case because there is evidence that Mr. Wilson was wearing gloves, which several of the eyewitnesses found rather odd. There was also strong evidence that Tinius Pike was in possession of a pair of dark gloves that night that I believe tested positive for GSR. It's a large, complicated evidentiary puzzle, and as the prosecution stated in rebuttal, and frankly, it's one where there are many missing pieces, but even the pieces that fit for the respective parties don't tend to fit very well. In this case, the import of BG's testimony, of course, was she was the only witness that would have identified shooters other than Mr. Pepper. In possession of either the Silver Nine or a silver handgun generally, and a black handgun. There was no other testimony to that effect. Now, granted, several of the eyewitnesses appeared for trial and couldn't identify any shooter and had allegedly very little recollection of these events. However, I think the significance of her testimony, and particularly had she testified consistent with her earlier statements to police, is she would have been the one witness that testified consistent with her prior statements to police. She also directly implicates Hiram Sampson in the shooting itself, which goes directly to Mr. Sampson's credibility. I don't think that there's really much doubt that Hiram Sampson's testimony was critical to the prosecution's case, and other than the generalized attack on credibility that's conducted every time you're confronted with a snitch.
She conflicts with him in that she has him with a weapon, and he denied having a weapon.
Right, exactly. And of course, Mr. Sampson's testimony is largely blatantly self-serving and exculpatory as to his own, based on the testimony of other witnesses, very central role in this dispute. He clearly instigated the dispute, and he very likely had some role in getting Donnell Wilson to come over there with the weapons. To hear Hiram Sampson tell it, it was all congenial and very cordial. That's not what the other witnesses say.
But as the people point out, he's pretty much excluded as the actual shooter,
based solely on the DNA evidence. But again, the interesting thing about the DNA evidence is that it's inconclusive as to Donnell Wilson, as to both the Silver Nine and the .45, when in fact there's very strong indication that he had his hands on both of those weapons. So yes, I mean that's a piece of the puzzle, but from my perspective, it's not an insurmountable.
How many weapons? Your theory of the case. How many weapons were there? Three or four?
Well, I think there could have been as many as three, to be sure. The only evidence that we had at trial was with respect to the Silver Nine and the Black 45. There was no other specific handgun identified or recovered, for that matter. And I think the prosecution proceeded on the theory that there were two handguns in this case, which quite honestly is somewhat consistent with the physical evidence at the scene.
But it's inconsistent with her testimony.
No, I don't think it is necessarily. I mean, given her placement of, of the three individuals that she saw in possession of the gun. And I don't think that you have to assume that there were three separate handguns. Two of the handguns are described as a silver handgun. It could very well be that it was passed off to another individual who after Donnell Wilson allegedly fired the first few shots, he passes it off to Tanias Pike, and he proceeds to shoot. But actually, what the evidence is that Tanias Pike dry fires into the kitchen. That's what BG would have testified to, which was consistent with the testimony of at least one other eyewitness. So it may well have been the same silver nine or chrome nine or whatever described by other eyewitnesses.
How many witnesses testified? It was closer to 150, wasn't it?
Excluding, well, there was a fairly small group of eyewitnesses who testified. I mean, there were various forensic experts and cops and whatnot who offered testimony, but very few of which had a sort of direct, percipient eyewitness testimony to offer. And I think it was about five eyewitnesses, excluding Sampson, who was a co-defendant and regarded as a snitch, obviously, from our perspective. I'm going to move very quickly to the alternate suspect evidence of Donnell Wilson's involvement in a homicide, suspected involvement in a homicide about 2 weeks after the shootings in this case. I don't think there's any question that the trial court's analysis is contrary to law. If one thing wasn't clear before, and I think it was under prior law, after Muniz, I think it's quite clear that the court misapplied the direct connection test. Shouldn't have been applied with regards to the issue of identity in the first instance. The issue of similarity between the acts as regards the issue of motive was a non-issue in this case because a direct connection already existed between Donnell Wilson and the crime. There's no doubt that Donnell Wilson was there and present at the time that the crime was committed. There is very little doubt that he was responsible for bringing both of those weapons to the apartments. The direct connection had already been established. That was not the purpose of the evidence about the stabbing that occurs 2 weeks later. And in fact, as I argue in the briefs, there is some similarity between these two events. There is some suggestion that the stabbing was at least somehow gang related. Both of the individuals involved in that event had ties to gangs. And it appears that they got into a verbal dispute.
And it's your theory that his involvement in that makes it more likely, what, that he lied here or that he in fact was a shooter here?
That he is the person who committed the shootings. That he has a tendency, when involved in this gang stuff, to escalate, and to escalate to violence and to deadly violence in the end. That was the theory, and would supply a motive where no motive existed, even for Mr. Pepper. That was
Mr. Wilson charged here at all in this shooting?
In the shooting, I believe he was charged, but obviously not as as a complicitor in the murder. My time is running down to a minute. If I
can
reserve the remainder. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Jillian Price, bar number 40815, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado. This court should affirm Mr. Pepper's conviction because the trial court properly exercised its discretion in denying the motion for continuance and excluding the alternate suspect evidence that Mr. Pepper sought to introduce. With respect to the motion to continue, The trial court had the following facts before it when that motion was made. VG, the missing witness, had been subpoenaed 3 days before trial. This trial was to last for approximately 3 weeks. There were close to 90 witnesses scheduled to testify, and it was going to be approximately 2 weeks before Mr. Pepper would put on his case in chief. The trial court determined that because VG was subpoenaed 3 days before trial, it was reasonable that she could be found again in the 2 weeks before Mr. Pepper would put on his case. Under those circumstances, the trial court was well within its discretion in denying the motion to continue. Similarly, with respect to the motion for mistrial, VG's testimony was largely cumulative of other evidence that came out at trial. As such, Pepper has not demonstrated the necessary prejudice, let alone the substantial prejudice, that one needs to justify the harsh remedy of a mistrial.
Talk about that prejudice issue for a moment. I believe in your brief you refer to actual prejudice. What standard do we apply to decide whether he was prejudiced in this case? Is it the actual prejudice as in, but for such and such, the result would be different?
Yeah, that's essentially what he has to establish, that the prejudice here was so substantial that no other remedy could cure this, and he has to say that, you know, but for the trial court failing to issue this remedy, the result would have been different. And here, VG's testimony would not have changed the outcome of this trial because other witnesses testified to the very same facts that Mr. Pepper asserted she would have given. And those facts, as Mr. Walter described, had to do with exculpating Mr. Pepper and challenging the credibility of Hiram Sampson, who again was one of the gang members that was a witness to this crime. Now, with respect to Mr. Sampson's credibility, Mr. Pepper extensively cross-examined him and impeached him with the details of his plea agreement, with other inconsistencies in his testimony, and the fact that he lied to police about what happened on the night of the shooting. With those things in place, Mr. Sampson's credibility was impeached. VG's testimony would not have changed that in any way.
What guns do you think were there?
Based on the record, there were two guns.
Two guns?
That's what the record tells me, Your Honor, that there was the 9 and the 45, and Sampson's DNA, as was discussed previously,
but there's at least three people with a weapon. Do you agree that it was passed?
The record shows that Mr. Pike passed a gun to Mr. Pepper.
I understand that. That's the murder weapon. Or that's the gun that has both DNA on it.
Correct.
But the witness places a gun that has not been tested for DNA, apparently. A black gun, which your opposing counsel said was a black 45.
That's correct.
You agree that was a black 45?
What the record says is that Mr. Sampson's DNA was not tested against the silver gun. That's my recollection of what the record says. Now, Mr. Walter says that there could possibly have been as many as three guns. I simply don't know that the record supports that. That allegation. The record, to me, based on just the face of the record, shows a 45 and a 9, the murder weapon and the second weapon. And Samson's DNA was not tested against the second weapon.
Bennett's DNA was found on the black gun.
Correct.
But you're suggesting he didn't fire it.
I'm suggesting that Mr. Pepper did fire the gun. His DNA was
He did fire the gun, but his DNA was not on it.
I believe Mr. Pepper's DNA was found on that gun.
But that gun in the possession of someone other than Mr. Pepper?
VG, if I understand your honor correctly, VG would have placed a gun in Samson's hands. Is that
black gun?
A black gun in Samson's hands, correct. Now, to the extent that that may indicate a third gun, I'm not sure that the record establishes that. Based on the forensic evidence, we have two guns. So I believe there might be, I think opposing counsel here is arguing that VG's testimony would have established a third gun in Sampson's possession upon which Mr. Pepper's DNA was not found. Is that what Your Honor is suggesting? Okay. I'm not sure that the record indicates that. I think what the record shows is there are two guns upon which Mr. Pepper's DNA is found on the murder weapon. Whether or not a third gun exists, as VG's testimony may suggest, I think there's no facts in the record that might prove that out.
Well, in reading the missing witness's testimony or no, statements to the police, she sees three people. Now, granted, she's not looking at the scene all the time. She's up and down behind the couch. But she sees three weapons, two silver weapons in possession of two different people, and the black gun in possession of a third person. None of the three are Mr. Pepper.
Correct. Now, I apologize.
And Mr. Pepper's DNA was not found on the black gun that was recovered. Or was it found on the black gun that was recovered? What had to have been found on the black gun that was recovered?
Correct. Pepper's DNA was found on the black gun that was recovered. And again, the two guns that we know were involved in this murder, the 45 and the 9, the black and the silver gun, were both found in Pepper's vehicle as well. Now, the proffer that Mr. Pepper makes about VG's testimony, and I'll read from the record. This is the transcript from August 12, 2009. VG indicated she saw a person in a blue shirt firing a gun into the kitchen that matched the description of, she says, Mr. Nitty. That's the alias for Tinius Pike. Okay, that could be one of the guns. She also indicates that person was dry firing, which would be consistent with one of the victims, PM. He explains that testimony may have been crucial to his case. And VG also put Mr. Sampson with a gun in his hand. She indicated that there was a bald individual with a silver gun, but that individual had a dark complexion. They believe that individual would have been Donnell Wilson. Based on that proffer, there's certainly an interpretation that there might have been a third gun, but again, the proof in the record shows a 45 and a 9, the 45 being the murder weapon, which is the black gun, and Mr. Pepper's DNA is on that gun. Now, with respect to...
It's seen in the possession of a different person firing it.
The black gun?
Mm-hmm.
There is differing testimony from the eyewitnesses about who fires that gun. That's correct. But at the same time, with respect to VG's testimony, what she would have testified to, there are other witnesses that place that gun in Pepper's hand and with Pepper pulling the trigger. Other witnesses gave the same facts that VG's proffered testimony was supposed to establish. In light of those facts...
Why isn't VG's testimony important to the defense?
Well, I'm not saying that it wasn't important. I'm saying it was cumulative of other evidence. What Mr. Pepper is asserting is that VG's testimony would have exculpated him and challenged Mr. Sampson's credibility. I don't dispute that. What I am arguing, though, is that the other evidence at trial disclosed the same facts that VG was going to testify. Under those circumstances, Pepper was able to make the very same arguments. He was able to present the very same defense. He was able to suggest to the jury that Pepper was not the shooter. He was able to suggest to the jury that Sampson
was the shooter. Which witnesses placed the black gun that's being shot in the hands of Mr. Pepper?
I recall it was two of the young men, two of the named young men victims in this case, placed Mr. Pepper with a gun in his hand, and I apologize, their initials escape me at the moment. One of the young men specifically said he believed that Mr. Pepper was the tallest person there, and he saw a tall person reaching his arm through the door and firing that gun. He made that identification based on the angle that arm was coming through the door. That must have been a tall person, and Mr. Pepper was the tallest man in that room. I believe he was approximately 6 feet. Another witness gave similar testimony based on what he believed he saw Mr. Pepper to be wearing and the arm that came through that door. And I do apologize, their initials do escape me at the moment. But we do have two of the young men who are victims placing Pepper with the gun and firing it, pulling that trigger. In summary, based on the information that was before the trial court when the motion to continue was made, and based on the fact that VG's testimony was cumulative of other evidence that was presented at trial, the trial court was well within its discretion to deny both of those motions. With respect to the alternate suspect evidence that Donnell Wilson was the shooter instead of Pepper, First of all, Mr. Wilson is more accurately described as a complicitor than an alternate suspect. In general, an alternate suspect is a person who is perhaps unconnected to the crime directly, who is, not one of the main people there. In this case, Donnell Wilson was right next to Mr. Pepper. They're both original gangsters in this gang. They're both involved in this argument, and there were two shooters in this case. At best, an alternate suspect argument for Mr. Wilson might place him as the second shooter, but that does not exculpate Mr. Pepper. Now, the alternate suspect evidence that Mr. Pepper sought to introduce involved an open murder that Mr. Wilson was allegedly involved in but was never charged with. That murder was very dissimilar to the facts of this case and does nothing to discredit Mr. Pepper's identity as the shooter. Now, to the extent that he wants to present evidence on the issue of identity and not merely motive or opportunity, that evidence should only be admitted if a reasonable fact finder could find that the facts pertaining to the purported alternate suspect create a reasonable doubt as to the identity of the shooter. Again, in this case, we know that there are two guns fired. We know that there are two shooters. At best, that evidence would have shown that Mr. Wilson or Mr. Pepper was the second shooter. Additionally, in this case, the jury was instructed on complicity, and even if this evidence was introduced, the jury still could have found Mr. Pepper guilty on a complicitor theory. Furthermore, to the extent that Mr. Pepper argues that this evidence would have been allowed in had the people introduced it, there's no support for that claim whatsoever. At best, this was propensity evidence that Mr. Wilson was allegedly involved in this other shooting. The people would not have been able to introduce that evidence under 404B, and the trial court's ruling embraces that argument and simply says, this evidence is not admissible because what it does is create an inference that Mr. Wilson is a bad person. The trial court did not prevent Mr. Pepper from introducing his alternate suspect defense. It simply prevented evidence that would have shown Mr. Wilson to have a bad character. Under those circumstances, the trial court properly excluded that evidence of the alternate suspect. Unless this court has any further questions on any aspect of the case that I can answer, the people would respectfully request that you affirm Mr. Pepper's convictions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a few points, Your Honor. With respect to the actual prejudice test, I addressed this in the reply brief, the sort of uncertain origins of that, the tests that I think should be applied if, in fact, we're going to apply the actual prejudice test going forward. The notion that there was other evidence that was cumulative of the testimony the AG would have given, I just don't think is borne out by the record. The only real evidence that the prosecution could point to below was evidence elicited from one of the detectives that a eyewitness, namely VG, had placed a gun or had identified Sampson as being in possession of a gun. The description of the gun is unknown. The point at which this occurred was not pursued. With that, I respectfully request that the court reverse these convictions. Thank you.
Thank both counsel for their arguments. The matter will be deemed submitted. The opinion will issue in due course.